This is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider for the six-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into a new edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast powered by the CLNS Media Podcast Network. I am Evan Lazar, joined as always by Adam Kirchen, and we are going to preview Monday night's matchup between the Patriots and the New York Jets, a much different team this time around for the Jets. They got Sam Darnold. We'll talk about him. They also are much healthier on the defensive side of the ball. C.J. Mosley back is kind of like their Dante Hightower. Quinnen Williams back, the first-round pick. So a little bit more juice in this matchup this time around than in Week 3, Adam.
Yeah, and I wouldn't think it's such a bad thing for the Patriots to have a closer game, you know, just to get tested, just to sort of get pushed a little bit. So I think it'd be neat to see one of those. And I feel like the Jets feel like that they have a better shot of doing something like that this time around.
Yeah, I was actually pretty surprised to see that the spread was 10 points in favor of the Patriots on the road. So that's actually like a 13-point spread because they usually give a field goal to the home team anyways. Shout out to our friends at betonline.ag. And but 10-point spread for the Patriots right now, with the way the Patriots offense is both health-wise and just looking in general, I think that that's a pretty lofty spread to cover for them on the road this time around, especially with where the Jets are headed. I know it was only one game against Dallas, and we don't want to overreact to just one performance, but they just look like a much different team with Sam Darnold under center than what they were, obviously, with Luke Falk. But it looked to me like in that game that Darnold gives you that kind of "we believe in this guy" vibe that you want out of your starting quarterback. Where he came into the game against Dallas and they truly believed that they could beat a team that on paper was better than them. And they were able to get it done, which was a pretty big upset. What did you see from Darnold against Dallas? And do you think he can replicate it here against the Pats?
Darnold just has better command of the offense than sort of anybody else on that roster for the quarterback position. Obviously he's more confident. I feel like he knows what to do and the play breaks down a lot better. He's got just sort of, you know, just, he's just got command, you know, he's confident out there. He knows that if something bad happens, he can make something good out of it. So I just like the way he plays. I've always liked watching him play back in his days at USC. And he's a playmaker out there when he needs to be.
Yeah, there's just a lot more belief in this offense among the players around him as well. Like Le'Veon Bell came out and talked about it before the Dallas game last week about how having Darnold back there, back in the game for them, it just adds a playmaking element and just a confidence element for the entire team. And one thing that really stood out just in the numbers was Darnold under pressure this season. He's been excellent. When been one of the better quarterbacks in the league under pressure, he has a 91.4 rating and is completing 62% of his passes under pressure. Compared to Luke Falk, it's like night and day, obviously. And Luke Falk also took sacks 40% of the time when he dropped back to pass, which is just insane. So that number gets cut in half when you put Darnold in the game. So it just makes this Jets offense more viable. I still think that they have holes, especially on their offensive line. But Darnold himself can make all the throws if you give him the opportunities to do it. And he's really good under pressure, just kind of eluding the rush and finding those soft spots in the pocket and not necessarily taking off and running all the time, but more maneuvering in the pocket and using his mobility to then throw the ball down the field, which I think is more dangerous in a lot of ways, especially if you have a guy that has the arm to get the ball down the field on the run and on the move. So the Patriots, you know, Bill Belichick said that it was much different than Josh Allen, which I agree with him that Darnold and Allen are not alike at all. But they have a mobile element to them. Darnold's not the runner that Josh Allen is, but he's a much better passer, much more accurate passer. So this is going to be a case of scrambling or moving in the pocket and using mobility to throw the ball instead of taking off to run. So that's a little bit of an element of this game to watch out for, too. But I just think that what we both mentioned about just the confidence and the feeling that they have in the huddle when they see Darnold in the huddle versus when you see a Luke Falk or when you see even another replacement level quarterback, and hopefully better than Falk. Falk was one of the worst quarterbacks in the league that we've seen in a long time play serious starting snaps for a team. So this is a very, very different Jets offense. The other matchup that I wanted to talk about was just the matchups with the wide receivers, because I think it's more about the receivers in this game for the Jets than it is about Darnold. I'm pretty confident that if they get open receivers, that Darnold's going to hit them and create plays. But are these guys going to be able to create separation against the Patriots' defensive backs? The one matchup where the Patriots have just dominated since really the start of 2018 is Stephon Gilmore versus Robbie Anderson. Robbie Anderson obviously being the Jets' top wideout. And since 2018... Anderson only has 3 catches on 14 targets with Gilmore in coverage and 22 total yards and 0 first downs. So he's basically gotten dominated or aced from the game, whatever you want to use, against Gilmore. And I don't know if Jamison Crowder and old friend Demaryius Thomas, who we'll talk about in a second here too, if they have enough juice to separate against these Patriots defensive backs.
No, I don't think it's something that is a matchup that's in the Jets' favor at all. This Patriots secondary is sticky really everywhere all over, and I don't see any of these guys being real threats. You know, I mean, we text each other all the time about the draft, and we every time, you know, a Jets pick comes up, we sort of try to get them a wide receiver.
Basically, my response to you is Jerry Jeudy.
Exactly. So I think that's kind of what they need is sort of a game-breaking wide receiver, and they don't really have one right now.
Yeah, Robbie Anderson's a fast guy, right? And I've talked to Gilmore a couple of times about it, defending Robbie Anderson, and he's like, he's just got speed. You know, he's just fast in a straight line. So what Gilmore does is he just beats him up at the line of scrimmage and doesn't let him get downfield. And when you have a faster guy like that, Anderson's a little bit slender, a little bit skinny, if you will. And Gilmore just gives him all of the hell at the line of scrimmage, and he doesn't get off any of that. I would assume that it's going to be John Jones on Jamison Crowder. Crowder, I like. I think he's a useful slot weapon. When he stays healthy, at least in Washington. I know health was a little bit of a concern for him, but he's healthy now in New York. He can create some plays. He did make some plays against Dallas running out of the slot. And I would assume that it's Jason McCourty on Demaryius Thomas. I wouldn't move Gilmore off Anderson just because he's dominated that matchup so much. But if they do throw Demaryius out there, like, I do wonder if, like, the first drive of the game, if they just put Gilmore on him after what he said in the media this week about the Patriots and about Bill Belichick. But I would assume it's going to be Jason McCourty on Demaryius Thomas. And really, those are the matchups that I think the Patriots have a huge upper hand in.
Yeah, and you know, I just feel like there's some teams that the Patriots face where the positional units on certain areas of the field just aren't where they need to be, you know, a high level NFL team. And I really feel like, you know, the Jets can get away with having this group against some teams that on the schedule, but this isn't one of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And before we talk about Demaryius Thomas and that whole thing, let's get to our friends at betonline.ag. The football season is in full swing. Get into the game with our exclusive sports betting partners, betonline.ag. Sign up today to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit to start betting college or professional ball. Every spread, every total, every winner or loser, straight bet, parlay, or tease your way through the season. You can even bet on wild proposition bets like, will the Dolphins win a game this season? Get the fastest to market odds, updates, and payouts with our new sportsbook partners, betonline.ag. Head over to our website today or use your mobile device to join and use promo code CLNS50 to receive your 50% welcome bonus. BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. Wow. You know, when they put a typo in the read and, you know, you're getting used to doing these reads, it really, really hurts your flow there. But back to Demaryius Thomas. I'm sure that you heard or read about what he had to say in the New York Daily News to Manish Mehta about the Patriots. He called it insulting. I believe the word disrespectful was thrown around there. And he's called his time with the Patriots a waste of time, which I think is a little bit short-sighted. But Demaryius revenge game, is there any possibility of that happening out there on Monday night?
I don't know. I could see him having a good game. Like, any player of his caliber, I mean, even though he's not like a total stud right now, I mean, can have one good game. And we've seen that in the past. But I just don't think he's quite talented enough to be a, you know, somebody who just dominates out there for a full game against the Patriots. So, you know, a lot of players over the years have talked trash about the Patriots in the lead up to a game and not, you know, cashed in on it, so to speak. Yeah. So I think
usually
that's more.
Usually doesn't work out well for him.
Yeah. So I don't think we see that this weekend.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the Steelers safety's name that trash talked the Patriots, and I think it was 07 maybe. And the Patriots threw Mike Mitchell, I think it was. I don't remember. Anyways, they were throwing they threw right at him and really exposed him all game long after he kind of talked trash. So I wouldn't be surprised if Demaryius kind of gets a little bit more attention than maybe he would have beforehand, just to make sure that he doesn't go off in this game. But in terms of did the Patriots make a mistake with Demaryius Thomas, I actually don't think that they did. And the reason why is because they decided to do something that's very Patriot-like, and they just went younger at the position. They went with the rookies. They went with Jacoby Myers, and they went with Gunnar Olszewski. And if you actually look at it salary cap-wise, they're paying N'Keal Harry, Gunnar Olszewski, and Jacoby Myers the same money that they would have paid Demaryius Thomas. All three of those guys combined equal Demaryius Thomas's cap hit. And I don't think that I think that they're getting the same, if not maybe potentially better production when Harry comes back from those three guys for cheaper, for less money than they would have had to pay Demaryius Thomas anyways.
Yeah. I think that makes sense. And I think, you know, it's not like Demaryius Thomas would have come in here and been like a dominant force. I mean, I remember him. He had a good preseason game.
Fourth preseason game against guys that got cut.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I don't think it was the bad move. I don't think it was the wrong move. I think, you know, they get three guys for the price of one, you know, I mean, that's,
yeah.
I think you'll take that every time. And, you know, like, it's not like Demaryius Thomas is, you know, Randy Moss in his prime. You know,
he's a decent player at best. I don't know where this, like, notion is coming from that Demaryius Thomas is the same guy that he was in, like, 2013. Or even like, 2014 or 2015. Listen, he's not that same player. That guy is not who he is anymore. Go watch the tape against the Dallas Cowboys this past week. He won on two different routes. Both were over routes, both where the corner thought that he had inside help and didn't get it. You know, and it wasn't a situation where he was really creating a ton of separation or really running away from guys or anything like that. The one big one that he had, a 33-yarder against Byron Jones. Byron Jones has outside leverage on him in the slot, and there's a corner coming down, a robbing corner coming down, or safety, excuse me, coming down that's supposed to cut the crossing route from Demaryius Thomas, and the safety just went to the wrong guy. The safety ended up cutting a little drag route underneath instead of cutting the deep over route by Thomas, and Thomas just ran in a kind of a crossing pattern over the middle of the field away from Byron Jones. And with that leverage for any corner, and unless you're the fastest man alive, you're probably not going to catch up to an NFL receiver that still can at least run a route. You know, it's just a really difficult leverage to be able to play in and be able to defend that route. So, you know, really, when you look at that tape, it's not like Demaryius Thomas is creating tons of separation. I don't even know if he would have been better for this team than Jacoby Myers. And really, when you start to add it up, the only way that he gets on the field is like the second half against the Giants, that kind of scenario where Gordon and Dorsett both get hurt. And they obviously the Antonio Brown thing doesn't work out. N'Keal Harry's still on IR. And they just are banged up at the position and they have to go to their fourth or fifth option on the depth chart. That's what Thomas would have been. He would have been at best their wide receiver 4 and probably closer to their wide receiver 5. And when Nikhil came back, maybe off the team, you know, like there might not have even been a role at that point for him. So I also think that the notion that it was a waste of time was pretty short-sighted by Demaryius, because he told us in the locker room the second time around, after they re-signed him, after they cut him initially on roster cutdown day, that the Patriots were the only team that called him all offseason about playing football in the NFL this year. He comes back, he has that great fourth preseason game, and all of a sudden teams are interested in him. And now he has a job in the NFL. Yeah, I know it's for the Jets. I know they're not a great team, but at least he's playing. Right. And I don't know if he would have had that opportunity if he had not shown out in the fourth preseason game and if he had not gotten at least some sort of a good recommendation from Bill Belichick. So I really don't think that it was a waste of time for Demaryius. Let's move on to Le'Veon Bell here, though, who I feel like the Jets, and maybe it was that he sat out all of last season, so he's still trying to kind of work his way back into football shape here, but that he hasn't really been Le'Veon Bell in Pittsburgh quite yet. I haven't seen that kind of juice out of him like we saw in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I agree. When I watch him, he'll have one or two nice runs, but he won't really put together that consistent game where you say, wow, this guy's, you know, unstoppable or anything like that. Right. So, you know, I think for the Patriots, their game plan doesn't really revolve around stopping him. You know, I think it's, obviously you want to pay attention to him, but I don't think with their front seven, the Patriots front seven, I don't think that they're in danger of getting sort of smoked by him this weekend. I think that as long as you make sure it's not, you know, just one-on-one the whole way, and you can sort of gang tackle this guy, they'll be fine. You know, could this be the game that Bell really breaks out and has a huge game? You know, maybe, but I just don't really see that same ability out of him so far this season. But, you know, like I said, any single game, you know, one guy can break through, but I haven't seen it from him so far.
No, I am with you on this one. So a big part of it is the offensive line, and this is a big part of the Jets' offensive struggles this year, even with at times with Darnold in there. So they rank 30th right now in PFS pass blocking efficiency rating, 30th out of 32, and they rank 29th out of 32 in run blocking grade. So this offensive line is really terrible, and I think that that's one thing that is a big difference for Le'Veon from here to Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh had a fantastic offensive line his entire career there, and also had a really good scheme with the offensive line too. And their running game and the way that their line blocked was always a huge part of their offense. That was why you could plug in like D'Angelo Williams, remember, where they would just plug D'Angelo Williams in and he would like go for 100 yards a game when Le'Veon was hurt or missing or whatever the case may be. Or last year with James Conner, you just plug James Conner in for Le'Veon and it's like the same production. That's because of that offensive line. So he doesn't have that offensive line now, but I also don't see the same kind of burst that he had before he sat out the year. I think he can wiggle the same. I think he's got great contact balance and vision still. But there was the one thing about Le'Veon was, as patient as he was, when he did see the hole, he hit it, you know, and that once he kind of allowed things to develop in front of him and he used that patience, that patented kind of, you know, hang in the middle of the line, hang in the middle of the whole type of thing that he used to do or still does do at times, then he would just take off once he would down throttle once he saw it. And right now his down throttle is not the same as it was 2 years ago. It just isn't, which I think is interesting because he sat out the year to avoid injury and avoid kind of taking on those extra carries. And maybe the being out of football for that long has kind of hurt him, at least in this first, you know, kind of six or seven games here of the season. Actually, I think they've only played 5 games so far, but regardless, maybe it's hurt him a little bit more, but I do think the offensive line is an important kind of talking point in this matchup because of how bad it's been and how good the Patriots front has been. That is a clear mismatch of the Patriots front versus the Jets offensive line.
Yeah, I just don't think when I've watched the Jets this year, I haven't seen the running game as part of, you know, something that you would worry about if you're a Patriots fan. I you just sort of watch it. It's like, all right, well, it's part of the offense, but it's not a dangerous aspect. I mean, the way Darnold played last game was the one thing where you look at that Jets offense and see a threat. You know, it wasn't Bell.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is too is just to wrap up the Bell point, they actually threw the ball to Belial Powell a little bit more last week than they threw it to Le'Veon. And if you're signing this Le'Veon, you're giving him this massive contract to be this two-way player. And I just don't think that he did have a 10-target game a few weeks ago, but I just don't think that they've like fully unlocked Le'Veon Bell in that offense yet. And I don't know if we're going to see that Le'Veon Bell this year. Mm-hmm. It might be until next year. It might be until they, you know, add some pieces on the offensive line and get a little bit better in that group until they really kind of get what they paid for, so to speak, with Le'Veon. Let's move over to the defensive side of the ball. Speaking of getting what they paid for, I would say that the Leonard Williams, Quinnen Williams duo. Now, Quinnen's been hurt, and he's just a rookie, so I'll give him that. But I think that the kind of the narrative, at least in New York right now, is that Leonard Williams has really never lived up to that draft status. He was, I believe, the 6th overall pick in the draft a few years ago. Quinnen, they took at 3 overall or something like that it was. And I don't know if either player has really popped the way that they wanted, although Quinnen did look pretty good against Dallas, and Leonard made some good plays against the run against Dallas as well. But what have you seen from those two guys? Because that's the, at least in the front seven, that's kind of their building blocks right there in the front seven. Take two guys in the top 10.
Yeah, I don't think those guys necessarily played up to their status yet either, but I do think there's potential for them to really wreak havoc. If you know, so especially against the, you know, a Patriots offensive line that suffered some injuries, you know, so I'd like to see how much they move those guys around. I'd like to see how much those guys sort of twist and stunt in certain downs and situations. You know, I was obviously a big fan of Williams, Quinnen, when he came out this past year. He's just so powerful and athletic. You don't see that sort of combination very often in a guy his size. So I think that there's a potential, at least more than in some of these other cases, for the Jets to really make a difference here. You know, I don't know whether it's going to be pass rushing or stopping the run. I don't know. But, you know, I feel like these guys, either of these guys can really hurt the offensive line a little bit and make big plays.
One of the things that they're both really good at, and I think Quinnen has a little bit more pass rush upside, a little bit more quickness, a little bit better first step. Both dudes are extremely powerful, extremely heavy-handed, extremely strong guys in the interior. And you mentioned some of the stunts and some of the things that they could do schematically up front. I think that sometimes, often watching this Patriots offensive line right now, it's actually the power and the bull rushing that's giving them harder problems than the quick guys. And I think that that's always been the case, actually, in a lot of years, because the Patriots can scheme around quick guys. Like a guy like last year in the AFC Championship game, Dee Ford. The Patriots can scheme around to Dee Ford, right? You just have the tackle set to 10 yards. You have the guy, him pushing by Brady, and Brady steps up in the pocket and makes a throw, right? And you just let that guy kind of scream past the quarterback every single time. But the guys that get pressure up the middle and that can push the pocket up the middle, like the two Williams can potentially, that does present a little bit, I think, of an issue. But I also think that those two guys haven't quite figured it out yet. And Leonard Williams is a player too that the Jets have talked about trading in recent weeks because he is in a contract year and he hasn't taken that next step where you're going to pay him a big boatload of money. So it is an interesting kind of, look at two really highly drafted picks that they obviously were hoping to be a building blocks of this team. And one of the weaknesses of the Jets is that they really don't have a great pass rusher. There's not one guy that you're going to circle on this front that you're going to say, okay, we need to block that guy or we need to be worried about that guy on passing downs. But with that said, they do blitz a ton. And Greg Williams is going to come after Tom Brady. Blitz Tom Brady 15 times in week three. He blitzed Dak 21 times last week, and they got pressure a lot on Dak on the blitzing, especially last week. 54% of the time Dak dropped back to pass, he was under pressure, which was led all quarterbacks in week six. That's not a good stat for the Dallas Cowboys offensive line. Right. So Greg Williams loves to blitz. Sometimes it gets him into trouble where he's blitzing, like that big Odell TD a few weeks ago on primetime. I forget what game that was. I think it was a Monday night game.
They
blitzed a guy off the edge, and it left the linebacker on Odell in the slot, and we know how that ended. It ended in a 90-yard touchdown or whatever it was. So Williams can be a little bit too aggressive and aggressive to a fault, but this entire Jets defense kind of has taken on the identity of coming downhill and really putting pressure on the offense.
Yeah, I don't know if it's necessarily the right tack to take against this Patriots team, though. I kind of feel like you know, it's taking players away from perhaps, you know, like we've talked about how teams are putting extra attention on Edelman and, you know, either bracketing him or, you know, putting guys to the left and to the right and trying to take away those little outer in routes and stuff like that. And so, you know, I don't know if it's smart to send extra guys when, you know, a lot of times right now, I mean, if you're Tom Brady at this age and you've seen so much, you're not going to just identify that right away and pick it apart.
Right.
So I'm not sure if I'm the Jets, you know, blitzing Tom Brady is the smartest thing. But, you know, if they're able to hide it and disguise it well enough, then sure. But, you know, I think what we've seen that's been successful against this Patriots team is when – you know, they've been able to, you know, put a lot of attention on Edelman, make other guys beat them and sort of frustrate Brady that way. And, you know, we'll see. I mean, maybe this is, you know, something that ends up working, but I just don't see that there's the sort of smarter way of going after Brady.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing for the Jets is that I think a big part of the reason why they hired Greg Williams is because he does have great blitz packages. And I think that they looked at their roster and they said, if we don't blitz and we don't get after the quarterback, we're not going to be able to put pressure on the quarterback with the guys that we have on this team right now, because they don't have those guys that up on the, they don't have premier pass rushers, right? So you can't just go 4-on-5 if you're them and just rush four guys and hope that you're going to be able to get home. So what they've done is they've hired Greg Williams, who's known for blitzing the quarterback and known for being aggressive. And they've really tried to mask some of their deficiencies, both they lack two really premier positions. They lack at pass rusher, and they lack at outside corner. And when you're a defense that lacks at those two spots, it can be pretty difficult to, you know, really even tread water, I would say, in this league without those two spots checked off. So what they've done is they've relied on scheme to pressure the quarterback, and it's been, I would say, mixed results. And they've really tried to force quarterbacks into making quick decisions so they can't expose those outside corners as much. The other thing that they like to do a lot in the secondary, just talking about some of their safety rotations now too, and we're going to get to Jamal Adams, who's just, I mean, we could probably gush about Jamal Adams for like 10 minutes. He's a great player. But what they also like to do in the secondary is that they like to disguise coverages and rotate coverages in the back end, where they're, Bill Belichick mentioned it after the game in week three, where they have two or three different cover two variations that are all cover two, but they play out a little bit differently for the offense. And they really kind of muddle this, what's going to happen pre-snap, and they'll run inverts or they'll run little tweaks to the cover two scheme to cover certain routes, like having the slot defender run the shoot up the middle with a post route or a seam route or something like that, instead of the splitting safeties dealing with that. So there's other little things that they might be able to do schematically that in the second half against the Patriots in week three, the drives for the Patriots in the second half weren't great. It was a little bit touch and go. They did score 10 points in the third quarter, and I do think that they let off the foot off the gas a little bit in the fourth quarter in that game, and they definitely did when they brought Stidham in the game. So there was a little bit of element of, you know, let's not empty the bag here in a week three game when we already have the lead in hand. But I do think that the Jets defense, the way they cycle through coverages, the way that they put pressure on the quarterback when they do get home, I think that that recipe could give the Patriots some problems because of their right now there are limitations on offense, both health-wise and just what we've seen out of the offense over the last couple of weeks.
I don't want to make it sound like the Jets don't have a good defense, because I think they do.
They've got an average defense. It's okay that you make them sound like they're not the 85 Bears.
Yeah, they're not. But they can do some things. And obviously, like, when you watch a guy like Jamal Adams play, I mean, even going back to his college days, he was somebody that was so good in terms of studying film, right?
Yeah.
And picking up tendencies from the other team, that it's almost like he could call the plays before they happened.
Yeah.
And he's just one of those guys that has that great football IQ, sort of lives in the film room and lives for the game. And, the other thing about Adams, he's a great tackler. If a guy catches the ball on him, or if a running back gets around the corner, you want Adams to be the guy who is right there. You know, I like him a lot. I think their defense in general, their secondary, plays well together as a unit. I don't think they always are, all the most talented guys and stuff like that. But I think, I think, again, it's going to come down to how they defend Edelman, right? Like, are they going to be able to keep the ball out of his hands and force other guys to make, Brady go to? And so I think, however they figure out a way to do that is where this Patriots offense is going to come down to for this game.
Yeah, the interesting thing about the Edelman kind of, part of this game, in week three, I think it was pretty clear. Even Brian Poole, who's a decent slot corner, really couldn't cover Edelman one-on-one in man coverage. They don't have anybody in the secondary that can just take Edelman one-on-one and shut him down for the game, or even come close to it. So, therefore, they are going to have to come up with a plan, or they're just going to get beat by Edelman all up and down the field all day long. So they're going to have to come up with some sort of plan to stop Edelman that isn't just the guys and man coverage. They play the cover two. They play some zone. They also play man free, just man to man across the board with the free safety roaming around the middle of the field. But that coverage is not going to work against Edelman because they're going to get exposed. So I think that that's a big element of what does Greg Williams, if he does anything, because he's known to sometimes just do what he does and not really have very many game plan wrinkles. Does he have a game plan wrinkle? Does he have a plan for Edelman in place? But I also wanted to talk about Jamal Adams. You just talked about him too. I think that Jamal Adams might be one of the most versatile players in the league. Like the way that they can use him, he's essentially a safety and a linebacker. He fills in the running game like a linebacker, and not just like a Patrick Chung style. Like he feels like he's an actual linebacker. And it's pretty incredible to watch him take on like pulling guards in the hole, or him just shoot gaps and make tackles behind the line of scrimmage like a linebacker, and really read the running scheme like a linebacker would and know his keys. Like he knows as a safety, he knows the run blocking keys and what he's supposed to be reading and the footwork and all that kind of stuff. And he's able to react to it like, you would see like a CJ Mosley react to it, which is just pretty incredible. And then you can put him in coverage on the back end. He can man-to-man tight ends. I think he can probably man-to-man a lot of wide receivers too. And he also can play some zone coverages as well on the back end. Now, Marcus May, who's also a really good safety for the Jets, he's 12th right now, and PFF's rankings among safeties, May is, and Adams is 4th. So they have a pretty good safety duo. Those two guys can really play. May is more of like a center fielder. He's kind of their back-end zone defender. He's not really a guy that plays close to the line of scrimmage. But Jamal Adams is everywhere for this defense. And that two-point conversion at the end of the game against Dallas was kind of like a microcosm of both Greg Williams and Jamal Adams, where Jamal Adams blitzed on the two-point conversion and was the reason why Dak basically threw up a pass that had zero chance to Jason Witten. And that type of play is the Jets' defense. That's what they want to do. They want to be aggressive. They want Adams to be a playmaker. And they're going to kind of live with the fact that maybe on the back end they only have five or six guys, really only five most of the time, I would say, accounting for receivers. And that's going to get them beat at times. But I don't know, it's at other times it can be effective, you know, and it's going to be kind of a battle of which team can be more in sync where the blitzes line up with the coverage, or can the Patriots receivers get open and be on the same page as Brady quick enough to be able to expose some of those weaknesses in the blitzes. But we hyped up the Jets a lot on this show. I like it. I think that, you know, it's somewhat warranted, especially the way that the Patriots offense has looked the last couple of weeks. I think that this is going to be more of a game. I don't think the Patriots offense is going to go three and out 7 or 8 times like they did in Buffalo. But if this was like a 20-13 game and kind of more of like a grinded out rock fight, I really wouldn't be surprised at all.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I would be surprised if the Patriots covered or the Jets covered this game. Yeah. You know, I think what's the spread? 9, 9.5, something like that.
Yeah, I think I saw 10 out there earlier.
Yeah, so I think that's doable for the Jets. I don't see the Patriots losing.
Right.
I think they're just better. But you know, I'd like to see a competitive game. I think it'd be nice to see this team pushed a little bit, like I said. So, but yeah, I don't see the Patriots losing.
A classic cop-out answer for both of us. The Patriots are going to win the game, but the Jets are going to cover, which I'm sure the people in Vegas and on betonline.ag would be very happy with. That's always the Vegas go-to, right, is the team wins but doesn't cover, and right. Everybody wins. Yeah. But just some quick, really quick here. The news on Patrick Mahomes has come out. Sounds like the Chiefs avoided an absolute disaster last night with Mahomes, and he's only going to miss a couple games.
Yeah, that's great. I'm really glad that Mahomes isn't seriously hurt. I think everybody is, because a guy like him is just really good for the league.
Yeah.
And it's more exciting when there's a team in the AFC that can challenge the Patriots. The Chiefs are obviously very good. Even without him, they looked pretty decent against the Broncos. And the Broncos are so bad. They look terrible. Flacco's just awful. But obviously, like, going back to Mahomes, it's good to see that he's not seriously hurt.
Yeah, I really think that, like you said, the league needs Mahomes. It really does. Like, obviously, they still have Brady, but Breeze is injured. Cam Newton's injured. Mahomes is now injured. They still have Rodgers. They still have Brady, but they're kind of missing. Roethlisberger's also hurt. They're kind of missing some of the firepower at quarterback right now across the league. And Mahomes is like not only firepower now, but he's also the future of this league. Whether Patriots fans want to hear that or not, that's just the case. Hey, he's going to be around for a very long time. But just looking at the Chiefs' next couple of games, they do play Green Bay, Minnesota, and Tennessee. If they have Matt Moore under center against Green Bay, which it does certainly sound like it next week, I don't think that bodes very well for them. The Green Bay's played pretty well. So, you know, as much as you don't want to see Mahomes hurt, and we're glad that he is not seriously injured, just looking at it from a standings perspective, the Chiefs are going to have to survive these next couple of games with Matt Moore at quarterback in order to stay in the hunt for the top seed in the AFC, because the Patriots, they're already 5-2 and the Patriots are 6-0. So, you know, if they lose a couple more games and they get to, you know, 3 or 4 losses here already without Mahomes, it's going to be an uphill battle for them to really, you know, steal the number one seed away from the Patriots. And I think that that's massive. You know, the Patriots went to Arrowhead last year. I think it's really, really a big deal for them to not have to do that again. Ironically, both of the Chiefs' loss right now are at Arrowhead, so maybe the mystique of Arrowhead is not what it once was. All right, do you have anything to tease before we sign off here?
No, I just got on Saturday. I'm going to the Harvard at Holy Cross game. It's going to be a really interesting matchup because both of these teams have started winning a bunch of games since, you know, losing a couple at the beginning of the season. Harvard lost their opener, and then, you know, Holy Cross had a really tough early schedule. They played they played Navy, they played Syracuse, but they've been winning since then. And I think it'll be one of the best, you know, atmospheres for a local FCS game as you're going to see.
That sounds awesome. Yeah. I haven't been to a Harvard game before. So
it's interesting. And Holy Cross has a really nice fan base out in Worcester. It's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been to Holy Cross's campus, and obviously the Harvard's campus also, but for different things, not for football games. So that is very cool. I need to go to more local college football games. I've only ever been to a BC game, so I got to spread my wings a little bit on that one. But I'll be at an NFL game on Monday night, though, with the rest of the CLNS media crew down in the Meadowlands. And me, Trag, Sierra Goodwill, Alex Barth, we'll have you fully covered down for Patriots Jets on Monday Night Football, which I think it's going to be a better game. I think it's going to be a good one, at least a competitive game. I think the Patriots probably will pull away at some point, but it'll be at least competitive. I also am writing something on Stephon Gilmore. Had a nice long talk with him. Also talked to Dre Bly, who is a defensive backs coach, cornerbacks coach, former NFL cornerback. He's now the cornerbacks coach at UNC. And in the offseason, Steph actually goes back down there to Charlotte, South Carolina area. They're right on the border of each other. And works out with Dre Bly in the offseason and really drills technique and works on his craft and does all that kind of stuff. So it was a really cool conversation with Dre, also with Steph. So be on the lookout for that. This weekend, my Patriots game plan is already up as well for those that are listening to the podcast this far in, hopefully, everybody. And it's already up there on the website. And like I said, make sure to follow Patriots CLNS. Patriots CLNS YouTube page for everything Monday night in the Meadowlands. And Adam and I will be back next week. Quick week next week, Adam, because we got Monday Night Football, and then we got the Cleveland Browns and Baker Mayfield coming in on Sunday. So it's going to be a quick week, quick turnaround. But that Cleveland game, hopefully it will be good. I think Cleveland has a lot of things that they need to work out. But that defense, I think, is going to give the Patriots a lot of problems, especially the pass rush, Myles Garrett. So we'll see how that goes for the Patriots. But Adam and I will be back next week to recap this game against the Jets, to preview the game against Cleveland, and do the whole thing all over again. But until next time, signing off for Adam Kirchin, I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.